Hey, folks, you're listening to the free version of the Ring of Fire Radio podcast. Now, I know a lot of you, thousands of you, in fact, listen week in, week out to this 48 some odd minute show that we put out every week. Well, here's what you're missing. You're missing another 96 minutes of content. That's right. More great interviews, more great analysis of the week's news. You're missing it because you're not a member of the podcast. Look, we're talking not even a couple of bucks a week, and you get 3 hours of great Ring of Fire radio content, plus you get access to all of our archives, and on top of all that, you ensure that this show stays alive. It's your support that makes our show possible. So if you like what you're hearing week in, week out, and you want to make sure it sticks around, the best way is to go to ROFpodcast.com. Do it now. ROFpodcast.com and sign up to become a member of the Ring of Fire radio show. Welcome to Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Cedar, and today on the show, journalist Rick Outzen will join us to discuss his new book, City of Grudges. Alana Massey will explain why a proposed bill to stop sex trafficking is short-sighted and counterproductive for those in danger. And Heather Digby Parton from Salon will be here to catch us up on what was an extraordinarily packed news week. Don't forget, you can go to ROFpodcast.com and sign up for the free one-hour version of the Ring of Fire radio podcast. And if you want the full show without commercials, become a member. It's the best way to support this show and to keep independent media alive. That's ROFpodcast.com. Here to help me run down some of the biggest headlines of the past week, Heather Parton from Salon, or as you may know her from her blog, Hullabaloo, Digby. So, Heather, I feel like we might have to do two shows this week just to get about half of what went on this week. It is sort of stunning, you know, and we've said this almost every single week, that the pace of the news has been unprecedented. And this week may be unprecedented within the context of the unprecedented era that we're living in. Certainly, Donald Trump's ability to create drama is, I guess it's on full display. I want to just mention the Conor Lamb victory in Pennsylvania's 18th, because I think that has huge implications going forward. But before we get there, we will definitely talk about that later in the program. I think we really need to address the firing of Rex Tillerson because of who will replace him, who will replace his replacement at his job, and the implications this has for our deal with Iran going forward. So if people somehow didn't know, Rex Tillerson was fired this week. I guess that was on Monday. On Tuesday morning. There were varying stories coming from the White House as to when he was notified. However, what we do know is that the Deputy Secretary of State was fired for telling the real story about Rex Tillerson's firing. So he was gone. As it stands now, Heather, there are 9 major positions at the State Department, only 2 of which are filled. And apparently one of those, the guy has already handed in his resignation, is waiting for a replacement. We have no diplomatic corps except for, I guess, the nomination of Mike Pompeo.
Well, actually, there is one more. Trump, I think they announced yesterday that they are promoting the ex-Fox and Friends hostess. I think her name is Heather Nauert. And she was in the press office at the State Department. She's now a deputy secretary of state. So they promoted a Fox and Friends person as a secretary of state. So deputy secretary of state. So, you know, never say that they don't ever put anybody into a job, because they do. When they have the best people, which, of course, you know, Trump did promise. So once they get those good people in there, you know, they definitely put them right to work. Yeah, this was kind of a stunner, although for those of us who've been watching this for a while, I mean, it wasn't stunning that Tillerson was fired. I mean, we've known that they were not, you know, a happy duo for a long time, and that Tillerson and Trump, you know, Tillerson didn't have respect for Trump and vice versa. But the way it was done, and the fact that there's a Nanak quality to Trump right now, I think everybody's noticed it. Right. I mean, there's an energy to him. And, you know, some of this seems to be coming along on the heels of new revelations from the Mueller investigation and from various other stresses coming at him. I think we talked about this last week. Some of this has to do, in my view, with his recognizing that the president has a tremendous amount of power and can exercise it without anybody telling him that he cannot do it. You know, Maggie Haberman at the New York Times described it as Trump was, terrified the first year because he didn't understand the job. And now he has understood that he can do things. And also, by way of, you know, just straight up observation, he can see that the Congress isn't going to do anything to stop him, right? So the courts, they proceed very glacially. You have the Congress, the press is hostile, they don't care. Fox will, you know, support him no matter what he does. He's got it. He's gained an understanding, I think, of the power of his office, and he's deciding that in order to win, he has to do what he has always wanted to do, because that's why people love him. And that's what will be the victorious sort of strategy for him. And it's not because he has great ideas about what he wants to do in the world other than tariffs and the death penalty. I don't think Trump really has any real ideas, and showing foreigners who's boss. But his, you know, the idea that he should just go with his gut and doesn't have to listen to anybody, I think that's really taken over. So you can see that, you know, the Tillerson thing, were a couple of major issues on which he and Tillerson had differences. One was Iran, as you mentioned. The other was on North Korea, where Tillerson was putting on the brakes and saying, look, you know, we got a long way to go before we can talk. And Trump last week, you know, raced in there and just said, yeah, I'll meet, no problem. And then, of course, there's Russia, where obviously Tillerson, who had come into office being very, friendly with the Russian government, and he had had a long relationship with them as an oil man, et cetera, seems to have made a transition to kind of understanding that there's a threat coming from there and has been saying such things. So those are major issues, maybe the major issues, right? Iran, Russia, and North Korea. Trump was on the other side of that, very aggressively wanting to go after Iran, and he's probably going to tear up the Iran deal, North Korea, and Russia. So, you know, that on a level of substance, look at those three areas about where we're going to see a change.
Yeah, and I think actually, you know, the Iran deal is going to be the most, I think, problematic. I don't know, or I should say. I think it's going to be the most problematic, actually. And I also not sure that, you know, Tillerson's presence there would have changed the trajectory on anything else. Let's put it that way. But it is a fascinating question as to why now. There was some speculation, and I don't know that we'll ever know, frankly. There was some speculation that it was because of Tillerson's reaction to the attempted poisoning, I guess, gassing, assassination of a a former Russian spy turned British spy in Great Britain, where the UK ended up expelling, I think it was 23 Russian diplomats. Some speculations because Tillerson came out in support of the UK's findings, and the Trump administration didn't like that. Now, I don't know if that was just the last straw. I don't know, you know, if we are to believe Tillerson, or at least the account that came from the State Department, he had no idea this was coming. maybe it's not inconceivable that they were just like, okay, we've got a lot of other problems with Stormy Daniels and et cetera, et cetera. Let's just do this now. It does feel like Trump is unshackled, and maybe that's also a function of maybe John Kelly is just basically, I don't know if he's attempting to impose discipline or just trying to curry favor with Trump. It's impossible to know what's going on there. It sounds like a complete clown show. But all right, listen, Heather, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about who is supposedly going to replace Rex Tillerson, and then who's going to replace that replacement. And here's a hint. One of those two people was if not the architect, certainly one of the builders of our torture regime during the Bush years. We got to take a quick break. I'm Sam Cedar. This is Ring of Fire Radio. Hey folks, Mike Papantonio's new book entitled Law and Vengeance, which is the follow-up to his critically acclaimed novel Law and Disorder, is finally out and available to you to buy. The book is a legal and political thriller drawing on Pap's experience both as a skilled trial lawyer and as a nationally syndicated political talk show host. The story follows trial lawyer Gina Romano, who was first introduced in Law and Disorder, on her quest for both vengeance and justice in a whistleblower lawsuit against a weapons manufacturer who developed and sold a dangerously defective rifle scope. Papp has built a story around real-life events that he's encountered as one of the top trial lawyers in America, where he's been fighting some of the world's largest and most corrupt corporations. Buy Mike Papantonio's new book, Law and Vengeance, today. Go to www.lawandvengeance.com. That's lawandvengeance.com. Check it out. I know you're going to love it. Welcome back to Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Cedar here with Heather Digby Parton from Salon. So, Heather, in the last segment, we were talking about the exit stage, I don't know, from the trap door of Rex Tillerson. And no great shakes as a Secretary of State didn't seem to think there needed to be any type of apparatus for the State Department, really, to exist. Maybe that was coming from the Trump administration. Maybe that was just his, like, I'll handle it. I'm used to running a, you know, Exxon, and all I'm interested in is a huge petro state anyways. So who knows where that idea came from? But he's gone, and Donald Trump wants to, or has nominated, maybe not officially, Mike Pompeo, who was a former congressman, then the director of the CIA. He was his tenure at the CIA was marked by his basically taking over the portfolio of the investigations into Donald Trump and slow walking all of it. As far as I can tell, he is somewhat anti-Russia, but also virulently anti-Iran deal. What else can we expect? And will the Democrats go along with? I mean, not that it matters, I guess, but because I don't know that they can stop it. But what can we anticipate with the Mike Pompeo?
Well, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Pompeo, first of all, he has no qualifications for either of the two big jobs that he had, the one at the CIA or this one. What the way he's proven himself to Trump was with his, he apparently had face-to-face with Trump every day, or almost every day, because he personally would deliver the president's daily briefing in oral, I don't know, maybe he did a little interpretive dance, I don't know, but we know that Trump doesn't like to read, so he somehow conveyed the day's news to him, the day's intelligence to him. And so they developed a rapport, and Trump likes him. And this is not surprising, because Pompeo is a partisan hack, was when he was in the Congress, and apparently he was when he was in the CIA. He, you know, kind of hedged a little bit on the Russia thing, although who knows what he was telling Trump in person. Right. You know what I mean? It's impossible to know. But he, you know, he kind of shaded the story a little bit and saying, well, yes, we do know that they, you know, they had something, but we don't really know what the whole story is there. He's very hostile to the Iran deal. And he is somebody who apparently Trump wants in there because he just want they the reporting is that they want to bring all, you know, quote, diplomacy into the White House, and they think they can do that with Pompeo. Tillerson, on the other hand, was kind of he was terrible at the job, but he was running around actually trying to do the job, you know, as the Secretary of State, and that's just not going to be acceptable. And Pompeo is assumed to be someone who will follow the strategy that Trump lays out. Now, he may have a problem in the Congress, however, and I think it's kind of interesting. He's got to go through confirmation again, but he's going to appear before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this time. And on that committee are some interesting people. They've got Rand Paul, yep, who absolutely is against. I mean, he's probably a vote against Pompeo. He voted against him last time, and he may very well vote against him this time. He just is not a fan. And then there's Bob Corker is on that panel, and so is Jeff Flake. Marco Rubio as well, who's had a lot of things to say about Pompeo, but he has already indicated he's going to vote for him. If the Democrats hung tough on that panel, and it's possible that they would now, there are a couple of them on there, I think Tim Kaine and one other, I can't remember who it was, who voted for Pompeo for CIA, but things have changed since then. So it's theoretically possible that if the Democrats hung tough and the three Republicans
two of whom we should say are retiring. So they,
right,
they
are retiring and have had, you know, a lot of complaints about Trump's foreign policy. And, you know, if they could find it in themselves to actually do something useful with the fact that they're retiring and actually
right,
stand up, it is possible, unlikely but possible, that Pompeo couldn't get out of committee. And of course, then you're always thinking, well, who would it be then? You know, God only knows. I mean, you know, Sean Hannity. I mean, you know, I don't even know. But this is, you know, this
John
is the
Bolton
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's probably going to be the national security advisor.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, you're starting to think maybe as we're going into the election and we've seen that the Republicans are looking at, you know, probably a pretty big blowout, at least in the House. So, you know, who knows where things are going to be there. But that is theoretically possible, that Pompeo could be stuck in committee and the vote never reaches the floor. I doubt it, because nothing these guys have done on the Republican side has shown me that they really have the courage of their convictions. So, you know, who knows? But, you know, I guess we'll wait and see. Pompeo is, you know, apparently the people in the State Department are at least open to the idea that he will be better than Tillerson, who they loathed with every fiber of their being, because he just was not an institutional player at all. And it's been just a complete exodus of expertise and competence out of that department, which is just, you know, it's scary, because that leaves,
right,
you
theoretically,
know, Trump,
Pompeo,
Stephen Miller, you know.
Pompeo will at the very least allow for the normal functioning, theoretically, of the State
right,
Department. Of course, he will be ultra aggressive and I think extremely dangerous in terms of Iran. But all right. Well, look, we have to take a break. When we come back in the next hour, if you'll join me, I want to talk about who we anticipate being the new CIA
yes,
director, because this speaks to an issue that I know you and I have talked about for over a decade. And we've got a lot more to talk about, obviously an incredibly busy week. If you'll join me in the next hour, I'll be talking to Heather Parton or Digby. I am Sam Cedar. This is Ring of Fire Radio. We'll be back in just a moment. Just ahead, Alana Mossy will explain why an anti-sex trafficking bill in the Senate is actually detrimental to those people it's trying to help. I'm Sam Cedar. You're listening to Ring of Fire Radio. ¶¶
Folks, the Ring of Fire is sponsored by JustCoffee.coop. That's JustCoffee.coop. If you like fair trade, delicious coffee, tea, or chocolate, head over to JustCoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and get 10% off. There's free shipping. You have no reason not to get this great coffee. It's a great outfit in Madison, Wisconsin, which supported the protests there. JustCoffee.coop.
Welcome back to Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Cedar. This month, Congress is considering whether to pass legislation intended to combat sex trafficking online with a bill entitled Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act, or SESTA. This bill may be well-intentioned, but it's actually going to be more detrimental to those who it's defined to protect. Here to explain why this bill is a bad idea, Alana Massey from Allure Magazine. So, Alana, tell us what the Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act of 2017, tell us what the genesis of this bill is. I mean, I think for people who are not familiar with this issue, it sounds like a good thing to stop enabling sex traffickers. But tell us about the problem of sex trafficking and then the genesis of this bill.
So the Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act is, on its surface, of course, as you mentioned, a great idea because no one wants to be enabling sex traffickers. The problem with this bill and the many that have preceded it are that the constitutionality of it and also the potential efficacy of it is completely unsubstantiated by the folks who are supporting it. So the primary issue with sex trafficking in the eyes of legislators who have created this bill in particular and ones that have come before it that have attempted to do the same thing is that it relies on the belief that advertisements for sexual services are the primary locations for sex trafficking to take place, and therefore getting rid of the ads means getting rid of sex trafficking. And they've relied on this idea to shut down sites like Redbook in the Bay Area, which was a local one, in order to shut down things like Craigslist's erotic services section, to come after various subsections on Backpage, which is still in operation. And the reality is that having the ads up is not what stops sex trafficking. And the way they want to get rid of the ads is through what many people who advocate for people in the sex trade who are both there consensually or they're under coercion or under actual trafficking circumstances, as well as people in the tech industry who understand freedom of expression online, is that it would require amendments to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which some people consider...
All right, hold on, Alana. Before we get into that, let's back up just a little bit, because I'm not sure, frankly, that broadly people understand the scope and the nature of the problem of sex trafficking in this country. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are simply misunderstand what the nature of the problem is and the scope of it. So let's just back up a little bit and first talk about what is the problem ostensibly that this is trying to solve. How widespread is sex trafficking? What constitutes sex trafficking? What is the nature of it in this country these days?
One of the main issues about bringing information to the public about sex trafficking and actually combating it in our country is that people have a very visceral and gruesome and very particular idea of what sex trafficking looks like and who does it and how it acts in the world on people who are victimized by it. And so, you know, these images are of, you know, shackled teenagers and really grisly sort of like mafia members who are committing these acts for the sake of their sadistic pleasure by forcing people into trading sex against their will and not receiving compensation for it, or being coerced and kept held captive in other means. And that is, of course, a very sort of, it's something that looks like that more often in movies than it does in real life. Like, real trafficking cases actually look a lot like, you know, the very boring visuals we have of people who are in poverty, who don't have access to living wages, finding themselves more prone to being exploited by other people in order to access a wage of some kind, or to access housing, or to, you know, have food available to them, to prevent deportation if their immigration status is threatened by someone who is coercive. Frequently, people who are identified as trafficked under the law do not personally identify with that term as having, as being something that happens to them, as to describe their situation. And so identifying who is trafficked is actually really sort of painful and traumatic, and it forces a legal identity onto a person whose experiences of coercion and sexual exploitation and of poverty and marginalization are substantially more complicated, and they don't feel that the word accurately describes their experience.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. So, all right. So if I'm clear here, part of the one of the challenges that we have in the context of both law enforcement and in terms of formulating policy to protect people who fall within this class of people as being sex trafficked is that there's not even awareness by those people that that is the context of their situation. So we could be talking about whether it's immigrants who are brought to this country, they have no support systems, and so they become reliant on the people that have brought them over, and they fall into a situation where they are forced into some type of providing sexual service that is where they don't have necessarily, I guess, autonomy over their over that business, or they don't have access to their money. And this can also happen internally in the country. And I would imagine that happens more often than not with younger people, where they are they're in a new city and they fall into a similar dynamic. And so these people are not identifying as having been sex trafficked. So is there any sort of, I guess, intervention by police, by law enforcement on that level? Because this is, when we talk about, and we'll get back to SESTA in a moment, that's a second order issue, it seems to me. In terms of that first order, is there any other way for them to provide intervention?
This is the big problem about addressing trafficking, is that there is absolutely no population that is considered more potentially dangerous and not a friend and doing more harm than good than law enforcement for people who are both in the sex trade willingly and consensually, and for people who are victims of coercion and trafficking. The reasons for this are the same reasons that get people into trafficked situations are people who are routinely left out of institutional and social services that would make it possible for them to make a living wage. So, like, trans teenagers of color who are kicked out of their homes, or who, you know, can't sleep at the homeless shelter because they don't have a policy for how to house trans people, or because, you know, they don't have access to services, or because, you know, the police are threatening those folks with criminalization on a number of other levels already. And because law enforcement, when they do attempt to make sort of interventions into trafficking situations, they arrest the person who is considered trafficked. They sometimes charge them. They have been convicted on many cases, including of trafficking themselves, because of the way the laws about this are designed and the way they're written. And because we have such a limited, you know, sort of legislative and law enforcement imagination about how to address this social
phenomena.
Ill. And the answer is just people have told, you know, law enforcement, they've told their legislators, they've told their community organizers, they've told everyone what their needs are. And it's like really simple stuff that everyone needs, like living wages, like care for their children during, you know, their working hours, food, housing that is, you know, not precarious or uncertain or reliant on, you know, documents that prove American citizenship.
No. Alana, let me just break you there because we got to break for a break. But when we come back, let's talk about now. Let's talk about SESTA and how the misguided this is and how this may be legislation that even is worse than it not helping the people that it's meant to help. We got to take a quick break. I'll be right back. Sam Cedar, Ring of Fire Radio.
I'm a trial lawyer. I've spent countless hours poring through documents that tell the story about the ugliest side of corporate America.
Fraud.
Corporate media refuses to talk about these issues.
The conduct by this company was deplorable.
I'm going to paint a clear picture about how disturbing, how corrupt corporate conduct has become in modern America. These are stories that no one else can tell. I'm Mike Papantonio, host of America's Lawyer. Question more.
Find out more at ringoffireradio.com.
We're back on Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Sam Cedar. Right now, I'm talking to Alana Massey about her article in Allure magazine. If you care about sex trafficking, trust people in the sex trades, not celebrities. So, Alana, in the last segment, you were explaining to us that one of the greatest challenges of dealing with sex trafficking in this country is that, the people who are victims of sex trafficking do not necessarily identify themselves as being victims of sex trafficking. They don't perceive themselves as being part of a broader class of people, but rather that they have fallen into circumstances where they have no leverage. And the other problem that we have is that being in those positions, that people tend to, people who are victims of sex trafficking tend to be in a vulnerable position, which makes them also vulnerable to the social services or law enforcement, which would ostensibly help them, ends up being at the very least unhelpful or perhaps adversarial. And so they can't go to the normal outlets, if you will, to get some type of help in these situations. At the end of the segment, you explained that the solutions for sex trafficking have to do with dealing with the circumstances that make them vulnerable and easily exploitable by people who are in a position to exploit them. So what does SESTA do and what does it or what is it ostensibly meant to do and what is it in fact do people think is going to happen if SESTA passes?
So the Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act, SESTA, is a bill that is right now in the U.S. Senate. And the aim of it is both to clarify existing laws about the facilitation of sex trafficking, which is, you know, considered being knowingly facilitating or creating opportunities for sex trafficking, not just the trafficking itself. So basically attempts to go after the enablers. And the way that they do that primarily is by amending the Communications Decency Act, something called Section 230. So what Section 230 does is state that a website owner is not responsible for content that is put on that website by a third party if they, you know, abide by certain laws with regards to the nature and type of that content, like various institutional rules that govern each website that do make it illegal to post illegal things and take appropriate action for that. So basically, something that's interesting is that, like, this already basically exists. Facebook is required to take down porn or, you know, cases that are, you know, illegal content or that, you know, enable criminal activity. But what Section 230 has done for the internet and for free expression generally is sort of immeasurable, because it's like the reason we have any user-generated content on websites is how social media exists, is how Amazon exists, is how all of these places exist. And so specifically claiming that websites that offer advertising space to people who are offering sexual services and to hold this exceptionally high standard that doesn't require constitutional protections of that website in a number of different ways is a way of sort of, it zeroes in on websites that offer ads for sexual services, right? And so what people believe is that the ads are the best and, you know, easiest way to traffic people, which is ostensibly true, that if you have an ad, you have much more visibility that you are offering this service. If you are offering a service illegally, it also means that you have a lot more visibility for people to respond to the ad,
track them,
go to the service, and then right, realize that there's a person being trafficked. Like, it is the primary point. It's the first step where, you know, you can identify and pursue a trafficking case. If you take down all of the ads, you throw cold water on, like, a really hot tip for where these people are. One of the really exceptional cases is the site Redbook, which was in the Bay Area, and it had both ads for sex workers and community boards for sex workers to interact with each other, tip each other off that there were going to be raids, for clients to ask questions. And it was also where clients who, you know, had responded to an ad in you know, whatever quote-unquote good faith, however people identify people like going to a sex worker, and believed that the person there was coerced and in a dangerous situation, and they came back and asked sex workers on this board, like, hey, I think this person is trafficked. Should I call the police? Should I do this? Should I do that? And that the Freedom Network, which is the biggest coalition of anti-trafficking organizations in the country, has routinely said that the most underutilized resource for helping people get out of trafficking situations is other people in the sex trades, whether they're there of their own free will, of their own enthusiasm, or out of, you know, financial necessity. That sex workers can better identify what coercion looks like. They have less stigma surrounding the fact that people are in the sex trades in the first place, and they know how to get people to the services that they need access to or the jobs they want access to in order to exit safely. And that's because a lot of people who are consensually doing sex work started out as victims of trafficking under all legal designations and then used sex work to escape that situation.
All right. So, Alana, if I understand it, the problem then, so what you're saying is that instead of actually inhibiting the profit-making element of sex trafficking, this is really just going to inhibit the best tool that advocates and perhaps law enforcement have for essentially exposing sex traffickers and rings and providing services and help for those people who are victimized by it. So the answers, I mean, this, I mean, to a certain extent, the story of SESTA seems like the story of a lot of things in our society where we will try and fix one of the symptoms or the second order issues instead of going to the root causes, which you've identified in this case, are really deal with the underlying issues that make people vulnerable to sex traffickers. That is their status either in this country in terms of documentation or their ability to meet their basic necessities, whether it's lodging, food, care for their children or whatnot. So the bottom line is SESTA is maybe well-intentioned, but it is not the right thing to do. Alana, I really appreciate your time today. And we will link to your piece in Allure magazine. Fascinating stuff.
If you want to actually eradicate the sex trades in general, one of the best ways to get rid of the worst elements of it is by listening to the people who are forced into the worst elements of it and giving them the tools to do it with a harm reduction model rather than an abolitionist model.
Alana Massey, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Alana Massey is a writer covering culture, identity, vice, and virtue. She's the author of the book All the Lives I Want and a forthcoming book about language, gender, and the workplace, both from Grand Central Publishing. You can read her piece if you care about sex trafficking, trust people in the sex trades, not celebrities, online over at Allure.com. When we come back, Heather Digby Parton will join us to analyze more news from the past week. That's just ahead. I'm Sam Cedar. You're listening to Ring of Fire Radio. Don't forget, check out ROFpodcast.com to support this program.